market rate, £3,000 a day. Were you signing Lionel Messi?
This is First Minister's Questions. Just once, it would be nice to get a First Minister's answer.
For Douglas Ross to stand there and talk about losing grip of a party when he has been leader, the Conservatives have had the longest attempted coup in Scottish political history.
The Steamy, a laudable production for The Scotsman.
Hello and welcome to The Steamy, The Scotsman's politics podcast. I'm Alistair Grant, The Scotsman's political editor, and I'm joined today, as always, by Rachel Amery, The Scotsman's political correspondent, David Ball, The Scotsman's deputy political editor, and from London, Alexander Brown, the Westminster correspondent for the paper. We're going to be talking about First Minister's questions today. We're recording this just not long after it's drawn to a close on Thursday. We're also going to be hearing from Alex later on as well, just about the latest from Westminster, and in particular, the Diane Abbott situation. But later on as well, we'll be hearing from Rachel. After two more deaths on the A9 in the past fortnight, Rachel has been speaking to Transport Secretary Fiona Hislop and campaigner Laura Hansler on duelling this road. Back in 2011, of course, the SNP government pledged to fully duel the A9 between Perth and Inverness by 2025. However, the project has been mired with delays and is now at least 10 years behind schedule. But before that, on to First Minister's questions, where one issue dominated. It was brought up by both Scottish Conservative leader Douglas Ross and Scottish Labour leader Anna Sarwar, and that is the issue of drug deaths and kind of rising drug deaths. This, of course, follows the news that Police Scotland reported 1,197 suspected drug deaths last year, a 10% increase on the 1,092 recorded in 2022. This reverses what had been a decreasing trend after a record high of 1,411 deaths were recorded in 2020. It's safe to say this has been a huge political issue in recent years. Nicola Sturgeon, the former First Minister, previously admitted the Scottish Government had taken its eye off the ball. The Scottish Government has pledged to do everything it can to tackle the issue. What was said to the FMQs by Douglas Ross and Anna Sarwar, Rachel, and what did you think of Hamza Yousaf's response?
Yes, this is an ongoing issue, and unfortunately Scotland has long had the unfortunate title of being the drugs death capital of Europe. And as you said earlier this week, those statistics seem to have gone up again, suggesting that what the government is doing is perhaps not working enough. As Hamza Yousaf said, the government has been ploughing more and more money into this area of government, trying to increase capacity as much as they can, but whatever it is they're doing, it doesn't seem to be working. And I think that's the biggest problem here at the moment. Yes, there's more residential rehab beds. Yes, police have now got naloxone kits. These are the kits that can reverse the effects of an overdose. But yeah, things are just going up and up and up, aren't they?
And David, I think this came up at the kind of post-FMQs briefing that journalists have with the First Minister's official spokesman. And he was kind of saying that the situation has maybe changed slightly recently.
Yeah, I mean, there's an acknowledgement that the nature of the problem has changed, as the First Minister's spokesperson put it, which is very much acknowledging that synthetic drugs are sort of complicating the methods they need to tackle some of these deaths. It's different drugs they're dealing with compared to even a couple of years ago. But still, there's a lack of clarity over what additional things they can do to address these new drugs that, well, they're not very new anymore, but it's still a new problem with the drugs deaths, and whether they are sort of just focusing on some of the older drugs that were maybe the biggest issue in the past, and whether there's more policies that need to be thrown into the mix.
And obviously, as I said in the earlier on, this has been such a long-running issue for the Scottish Government. Rachel, what did you think of how Hamza Yousaf handled the questions today? And he was obviously quite keen to, you know, acknowledge that this is a real issue. It's not one that's been solved. It's one they've still got a lot of work to do on. But also defend some of the Scottish Government's record in terms of the investment, in terms of the approach it's trying to take to tackle this issue.
I think it will be a lot of cold comfort to those who have relatives who struggle with addiction or who are working in sort of charity groups or campaign groups to try and solve these problems, because it's been this sort of problem for a long time. And as David was saying, perhaps there's too much focus on drugs that perhaps were an issue in the past, and maybe not so much the synthetic opioids and nitazines that are coming in nowadays. And yeah, you can throw as much money as you want at it, this is not going to go down. And yes, it's not going to happen overnight, but the numbers need to come down slightly if to show any sort of progress whatsoever, and that's not what these figures are suggesting this week.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say this is an issue that will run, and we'll hear much more about it in the weeks and months to come. Certainly by the evidence of today's, of the recent numbers anyway, is not something that's improving anytime soon. But down to Westminster and the controversy and the row that's been developing over the alleged comments by a Tory donor about Diane Abbott. Alex, what's the latest from Westminster about this?
Well, not much in terms of taking a solid stance from Downing Street. We kind of had a real farcical few days where when the allegations first came out in the morning, ministers were going out and saying, you know, he didn't do anything. He said a bad thing, but it's not racist. He's apologised and that's the end of the matter. That was at 7:30. They said the same again at 9:30. At Lobby, we were told, this is on the Tuesday, that, you know, he didn't say anything racist. He's apologised. He made a mistake. And, you know, it was an attack on her as her ideas rather than the colour of her skin, even though quite explicitly it was an attack on the colour of her skin and alleged incitement to violence. And then by the end of the evening, Kemi Badenocher tweeted saying it was indeed racism. So then Downing Street changed their mind and said it was racism. It's been a really horrible handling by Downing Street of a disgusting situation. And at PMQs, we had this farcical situation where the Prime Minister was asked about the comments. And instead of saying, you know, they were racist, it was bad, I'm going to give the money back, he said, you know, they were racist, but he's not because an apology has been made, and then said that he wouldn't be giving the money back, and tried to turn it onto Labour and tried to say, you know, what about Angela Rayner? She called Tories scum. There was a lot of false equivalencies and whataboutories happening. And the latest now is that there's been another 5 million that's being held up, the party's waiting to have access to, a 5 million donation that was coming in from Frank Hester. So it's a real mess. Lots of people in the party are angry, and we're in the position where we have cabinet ministers going off-piste. When Kemi tweeted, that wasn't the government's position. And then you also had Neus Ghani's, another minister, saying opposing racism is more than a phrase. Clearly very unhappy with the government's approach. So it's slow to act, and it's even more damaging than simply coming out and condemning it would have been.
The Scottish Conservatives released a statement about this as well, didn't they, where they were kind of essentially criticising the UK government's position.
Yeah, and I feel like for a long time, the Scottish Conservatives have kind of been the slightly more progressive wing of Conservatives. They've never been slow to call out the Westminster Party. I think Douglas Ross is one of the very first people to say that Dominic Cummings should resign, for example. And we already know that the Scottish Tory leadership are very unhappy with Downing Street over oil and gas. So it just escalates a row and a rift between the two that shows no signs of healing anytime soon.
And obviously there was a row as well over the Speaker failing to call Diana Abbott during Prime Minister's questions on Wednesday. What did you make of that, Alex?
It was quite remarkable because people were standing up and speaking about Diana Abbott, and I think she bobbed her head 40 times. I think that's a procedure. You kind of stand up and keep bobbing, try and get noticed by the Speaker. There's a call list, and then others speak to get noticed. It's like having a reservation and other people turning up to get a table. She was very visible. All the conversation was about her, and she wasn't picked. And the Speaker tried to justify this by saying, well, you know, there's a list of people. I can't see everyone. But Ed Davey wasn't on the list, and he still got a question. And when all the debate is about Diane Abbott, you would think she would get a space. And you could tell how upset she was. And the fact that Keir Starmer, straight after PMQs, went over to kind of comfort her and had a long conversation where she was visibly upset. I mean, they are not close friends or even allies. He currently doesn't have the Labour whip. She spends a lot of her time tweeting pictures of Keir Starmer that look like they were taken on a potato and while saying something negative about his policies. And then Stephen Flynn did the same after. So there was, and Stephen Flynn also said that, you know, it only added to his belief that the Speaker should go and he wasn't fit for purpose. So lots of rows have escalated this week, and it's been terrible for the Speaker and even worse for Downing Street.
Yeah, well, from Westminster and back up to Scotland, moving on to a very different issue. Rachel, you've been looking at the ongoing saga around duelling the A9. I know this is something close to your heart. You live on the A9. What have you been hearing about and where are we now?
Well, yes, this is a notorious road for all the fatalities that happen. And in the past fortnight alone, there have actually been two more deaths on this road. So Roy Bannerman died after a collision near Aviemore on March 8th. And James Noble died on March the 12th after a collision near North Keswick, which is just north of the section that the government has pledged to dual. I should also point out as well, the government has also pledged to dual the A96 between Inverness and Aberdeen, and on May the 5th, Corporal David Thorne also died on this road near Huntly. So it's a big issue, particularly in the Highlands at the moment. So I've been speaking to Transport Secretary Fiona Hislop and campaigner Laura Hansler about the government's pledge to dual this road, and we'll hear from Ms Hislop first. Fiona Hislop, thank you very much for joining us on the Steamy today to discuss all things with the A9 dueling project. First off, you've got a new position in the Cabinet now. You're now Transport Secretary, so congratulations on that to begin with.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
And were you nervous at all about taking on this position, given there's lots to do in transport just now?
Well, I've had 7 months as a Transport Minister, and before that, I was Deputy Convener of the Transport Committee in the Scottish Parliament, and having had two years in the backbenches, but prior to that having 14 years at government, at cabinet level, it's interesting coming back in a different area. But I think transport is so vital because it impacts on everyday, and in terms of the range, it has an impact on the economy, society, and of course climate change and the environment as well. So it really is a delivery portfolio, which is great. There's a lot of different moving parts, literally, and in terms of transport operators to work with. But it's so important to Scotland. If you think about the geography of Scotland, we are so reliant on that effective, reliable, resilient transport system, and that's what we want to try and support in government.
So we move specifically to the A9. Is it a road that you drive a lot on yourself?
Yes, I regularly use the A9. Indeed, I think when I first bought my first car, a white Ford Escort, I remember driving from Edinburgh on my own all the way up the A9 and up to Lochinver. It was that sense of freedom and liberation. And I think the A9 is very functional. A lot of people use it frequently for commuting, and obviously it is the transport backbone of Scotland, and so from that kind of economic aspect, it's really, really important. But what we want to do with A9 dueling is to make sure it's resilient and reliable, and safety has to be at the forefront. So we have already dueled parts of the A9. We've got a plan now, which is the most comprehensive plan we've had to date, and it sets out what will happen for all the different sections. And what will be delivered, because we'll see by 20, 30, 50% of the road dueled, we'll have by, you'll have 85% by 2033 and 100% by 2035. And that will make it a big difference. Now, there'll be continuous work on it, and certainly with the Tomasson-Tamoy section out for procurement, and with the tender due to be allocated in summer, we're going to have a situation where from then on, will always be one part of the A9 at some point being worked on as part of that dual.
So we do have a petition going through the Scottish Parliament just now, led by Laura Hansler, who we are also hearing from on this podcast episode. Do you understand that sort of the anger and upset that those like Laura are feeling just now on the A9?
So I met Laura when I was in Inverness, just at one of the open sessions, the briefing sessions for key stakeholders, and I absolutely understand how people are looking and seeing the A9 historically, but also from our engagement that we had just last week in Inverness, the discussion about, well, actually, we're already doing the safety measures. We're not waiting for the plan for dueling. We're already implementing safety measures that she has welcomed. But if you look over the history, and particularly there was that year, 2022, where there was an exceptional number of fatalities, and any fatality is a sadness to individuals, but also I think it is a responsibility for all of us to try and see how we can tackle that. So there are a number of communities that want to see the A9 dual for a number of different reasons, but the most, I think, impactful are those that have lost loved ones and know that things need to improve. And so therefore, both the £5 million of safety investment that we've been investing over the last year, on top of the regular, obviously, regular maintenance and renewals, as well as what will be a £3.7 billion investment at today's prices, very similar and within the budget of what was initially planned for. That plan will help deliver that kind of resilience and reliance, which will improve safety, because that obviously in a key arterial road, the transport backbone of Scotland, needs to be dualled, and that's what we're going to be delivering.
You were saying there about the sort of the safety aspect of the road. It's a road that I use fairly regularly. I live on the A9 myself. Just thinking of things in the past year, for example, for myself, one incident heading on to Blair Athol, for example, the car in front of me stopped really suddenly, and we're talking inches away from a crash at 60 miles an hour. Another incident as well, going past the FNAB area of the A9, I saw a camper van doing a three-point turn, again on a 60 mile an hour section of the carriageway. Do you accept that these sorts of dangerous situations are happening on these single carriageway sections of road because it hasn't been dualled yet?
Well, I think what you've just described yourself is driver behaviour. And obviously we always have to work on road safety and driver behaviour, and some of that has to be about speeds and changes and making sure people understand what the actual speed limit is. And we've done that with some improvements, for example, with the HGV signage that was potentially confusing people, so that's been sorted. In terms of the other aspects on the safety already happening is to making sure some of the coverings on the A9 has sound and vibrations, which make people realise that they're in a different area of the road. But we're always going to have to improve driver behaviour, we understand that. But actually trying to dual it will enable, I think, a degree of safety, perceived safety as well as actual safety that can be provided for. But we always have to make sure that people are responsible on our roads, and I would just appeal to anybody driving on the A9 to make sure that they're very alert to everything else that's around them and be sensible in what they do. But the improvements to junctions you mentioned are really, really important, and so therefore a lot of the work and improvement is actually tackling existing junctions. And the sections around Dunkeld, for example, have been subject to a co-creation with the local community, and so their input has actually made and devised a compromise proposal which will help tackle some of the kind of really concerning junctions that they experience at the Hermitage and also coming out of Dunkeld as well. And that's why, for example, their proposal for a roundabout at the Dunkeld junction is something that has been agreed in terms of Transport Scotland's recommendations. So, you know, listening to drivers' experiences, listening to communities along the line has happened. And we'll be ramping up the engagement with communities along the A9, because I want to see openness, transparency, and to make sure that communities know what's happening. And of course, there will be some disruptions. We expect a lot of the build will be off the existing road, but there has to be planned for scheduling, and obviously communities will need to be heavily involved in that.
And some of the campaigners have also said that they feel that the A9 is being treated as a sort of a forgotten backwater because it's in the Highlands, and other sort of major infrastructure projects like the Queen's Ferry Crossing, for example, and roadworks leading up to Glasgow 2014 were completed, you know, a lot quicker. Do you accept that that's perhaps been because they're in the Central Belt, perhaps, and this is in the Highlands?
Not at all. And indeed, the progress and the investment of £450 million in the A9 dualling project to date is evidence that there has been investment. Clearly, there have been a number of transport investments, particularly in the north of Scotland. We've seen the AWPR, for example, which has been an important link. And you also look at other infrastructure projects that have taken place in the Highlands. And we've seen, for example, the New Justice Centre, the new treatment centre in Inverness, the housing investment that's there. So capital investment is going to be really tight. We've seen a 10% reduction in our capital funding from the UK government. So despite that, the vote of confidence in the importance of the communities along and at the other end of the A9 is really important. And I also want to reflect that we're also making sure we've got safety and maintenance and improvements on the north of Inverness stretch of the A9 as well, because there's so much focus, understandably, on Perth to Inverness, but I'm very conscious that that improvements in terms of that safety agenda must continue and is continuing north of Inverness as well.
Now, back in December, we had the sort of updated timeline of 2035, albeit that is a 10-year delay from the original schedule. Can you guarantee that it will be absolutely done by 2035, this new timetable that's been put out?
Well, we've got a clear and detailed plan that sets out when we'll move to procurement, when we'll start in terms of that construction delivery. There'll be 50% of improvement and by dualling by 2030, 85% by 2033, 100% by 2035. I do know that events can happen. We understand that. And indeed, one of the things that's happened in, as part of this detailed ban is to shift the type of contract we have. So the risk is moving more to ministers. So if there's adverse weather, etc., in previous days, you would have had the contractor picking that up. That's now going to be something that ministers have to do. So in terms of will it be done by 2035, that absolutely is the plan. But obviously, in terms of events, I'm not going to be I'm not going to be sensible. I'm going to be sensible to identify. Obviously, things can happen, but we have the most detailed plan that sets out that at any point in time, there'll be work in the north or the south of the A9 to deliver what is a really ambitious and indeed major investment for the people in the communities of the Highlands.
Now, you were talking about Inverness. We know it's a massively growing city, I think one of the most growing in Scotland, I think. Do you think that that's going to be even more so, improved even more once the A9 is dualled?
Well, I think Inverness is a great city. I think in terms of what's happening there, you see the Inverness Castle development. I was involved previously as Minister in that, so that's exciting. But if you look at what's happening in terms of the energy renewals, what's happening on the Cromarty Firth, in terms of that growth in population, it's perhaps bucking where in other parts of the Highlands you're seeing populations facing more challenges, that Inverness is developing. That's why Scottish Government investment in housing and also in the health provision and the National Treatment Centre and also in justice is a recognition of the importance of Inverness as a growing and thriving city and a fantastic place to live.
Mrs. Hope, thank you very much for joining us on the Steamy.
Thank you.
One thing I thought was interesting in Mrs. Lopp's interview there was I pointed out a few incidents there on the road, and she says that's down to driver behaviour, but I would argue personally that the bad layout of this road is what is causing this driver behaviour, because you would have a camper van doing a 3-point turn on the M8, for example. But next we hear from Laura Hansler. She lives in Kincraig and has kind of become the face of this campaign to dual the A9. She submitted a petition to the Scottish Parliament calling on the government to commit to its original pledge of dualling the road by 2025. Now, we know that won't be happening, but she's very keen to make sure the government are held to account on what they are doing now. So let's hear from her about what it is like to live on this road. Well, Laura, thank you very much for joining us on the Steamy today to talk about the A9 dualling project. Now, I know that we've spoken before at length about what life's like on the A9. I believe that you live in Kincraig. Can you just tell me what it's like living on the A9 and using it regularly?
I've been a resident in Kincraig now for 20 years. So, you know, over the last two decades, I've, you know, seen a vast change in the volume of traffic and also the different types of habits that people form when they're driving too. And although Kincraig was one of the very first sections to be dualled, I mean, I think I can safely say most of the residents probably don't use that section because we have to go to either end really to join the A9. But basically, you know, from the kind of school Easter holidays right through to the end of the October school holidays, you know, there's, you know, an exponential rate of traffic comes up on the A9, and you can very much hear the difference in the emergency service sirens going most days in peak holiday times.
So that must be quite distressing to hear that just in the town on an often basis.
It can do, because, you know, you can get to the point, obviously, you know, a lot of people now can differentiate between fire service, police, ambulance. Then you've got, you know, you'll have the helicopters coming over as well. And quite often, you know, in these smaller villages, the emergency services have to use the village to cut through to then back up and go around the accident as well. So you're very much aware of it, and, you know, it's very much amplified at those times.
Do you think people who live in the Central Belt, for example, are not using the A9 regularly? Do you think they're aware of just how commonplace that is for those who live there?
I think there's still this kind of almost romanticised notion that it's some kind of lovely Highland back road almost, that the volume of traffic's not the same, and maybe perhaps they don't have their wits just quite around about them as they maybe would do on the M8 or the M9 or something like that. And I think it can be a bit of a shock to the system just to be in that volume of traffic at certain times coming up this road.
Now, you've got a petition going through the Scottish Parliament just now calling on the government to commit to its initial promise of the A9, which we now know is not going to happen. But do you want to explain why you wanted to bring in this petition and why you thought it was important to do this?
I think I've always had a very strong kind of awareness of social justice. And I think, you know, it's very easy for everybody just to sit back and moan. Maybe, you know, if they're a wee bit more proactive, write a few letters to a newspaper or write to an MSP, if you're lucky. But a lot of people just sit there and do nothing. And that's not for me. And I think, you know, by the time we had 13 tragic deaths in 2022, I'd had enough, because year on year it was increasing again. You know, we'd had a wee bit of a drop round about the speed cameras, 214, 215. It did kind of dampen down a wee bit. Then I think complacency set back in and the rates just went back up, and the actual sites where the accidents were happening was shifting. And it was getting to be, you know, you sit as a local and you actually start to think, when is it going to be somebody I know? When is it going to be a member of my family? And then, you know, there was one night one of the families contacted me and I just couldn't sit and do nothing anymore. I just couldn't sit back and do nothing anymore.
And so we now know that the new timetables for 2035, I spoke to the Transport Secretary for this podcast episode as well, and I asked him, is this, you know, guaranteed by 2035? And she said, that's the plan, but obviously things can happen. How confident do you feel the government are now going to stick to the plan that they've got and get through dualled by 2035?
You know, I'm very sceptical about it all. I think, you know, if we look at what they've achieved in the last 16 years, it doesn't give you the greatest of confidence. We've only had 11 miles dualled, and they weren't the most complex of miles that we've had dualled. You know, there's more complex sections out there yet to be looked at. So we're all very sceptical, and I think a lot of confidence has been lost in the villages and further afield through Scotland about the whole project, to be honest. And I think everybody's got a right to feel that way. And the communities are very, very jaded by it all. So I think until, you know, I even said the other day, and I said to Fiona Hislop herself, until the diggers are actually on the ground and until turf's actually getting cut, that is only when you'll start to regain any kind of form of trust within these communities.
Is there anything else you think the government could do at the moment to sort of try and rebuild that relationship with the communities?
I think at the moment, you know, there was different parts to the petition, and it is a long process. I think at the moment they have to keep up the dialogue. They have to be very transparent. So I think a lot of the things that have happened, you know, the political will sort of waned sort of late 2015, and certainly by 2018, it's sort of been dropped like a hot potato. And certainly I want to know why, whom and on whose orders that was, kind of thing. So I think as long as there is a lot of dialogue is opened and they proceed with utter transparency from now on in, then they might start to regain some kind of confidence and faith in the communities.
So over the past few years, we have had these delays to the A9, or there has been sort of setbacks or problems have arisen. I mean, how does it feel for you? Because obviously we hear how it's feeling from the politicians in Holland, but for you as somebody in the community, how does that feel?
It's frustrating, and you do feel like you're forgotten. You certainly don't feel as important as somebody sitting in the central belt. And I've said that before, and I've been very open with it. I think there's an awful lot of this. It is political. People say, oh, it's not political. It is very, very political, because I think a lot of things have been about the populist vote. I don't think they're thinking about the electorate up here, and they need to. You know, we are number one holiday destination, really, in the UK. Our backbone and industry really up here is hospitality. And if we can't get people up here safely to have their holidays, then we're losing from the get-go. So they need to invest a lot more up here, really, not even just in the locals, but, you know, in the whole sort of employment sector as well.
And when would you get the road fully dualled, Perth to A9s completely as it was promised? How much better do you think it's going to be?
I think even looking, you know, so I've been at the Transport Scotland briefings and a couple of the road shows, and the diagrams and the visuals they've got out look fantastic. And I think the transformation will be absolutely breathtaking. You know, I think, you know, just for a change, you might be able to go out onto a road and just drive the road without actually, you know, it's not one of these roads you just get into the car, put the radio on, have a wee sing song to yourself and you just drive it relaxed. You're really quite tense driving it, and you're very much aware that you're very much actively driving it. So I hope that it becomes a more pleasant journey for everybody that uses it, and a far more safer journey for everybody that uses it. Because right now, it's a very stressful journey for everybody.
Laura, thank you very much for joining us on the Steamy today.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks very much for that, Rachel. I should say that while we were recording this podcast today, the news broke that Michael Matheson, former senior SNP minister, still an MSP, obviously, the long-awaited report into his £11,000 iPad bill that was racked up in his parliamentary iPad during a family holiday to Morocco has been released. I'm sure we'll have much more about that on the Scotsman's website and in the paper on Friday. But thanks very much for listening, and that's all for now.